From Austin, live music capital of the world, this is Texas Music Matters. I'm David Brown. Coming up, a musical Rip Van Winkle tale from Denton, the unexpected return of the Baptist Generals also. Remembering the place with a coffin-shaped door and a constant parade of young musicians who'd one day become among Austin's most celebrated artists, the One Night Dive and Tavern. And what can a 27-year-old audio tape tell us about the state of Austin music today? Well, you might be surprised. NPR's John Burnett joins us to talk about it. Plus, a real-life story from the road, musician David Ramirez with an intimate coming-of-age tale, the week's music news, and lots more. Texas Music Matters gets underway in just a moment. Stay with us.
Texas Music Matters is made possible in part by Lewis Shanks of Texas, offering fine home furnishings since 1945. LewisShanksFurniture.com.
From Austin, this is Texas Music Matters. I'm David Brown. We like to get the show started with new music, but it's especially fun when you get to turn the spotlight on someone set to make a big splash. At least that's how it feels to all of us. She lives in Austin, was born and raised along the Texas Gulf Coast, and has already had a kind of national audience on TV's talent show, The X Factor, although her appearance on TV did not quite result in the career boost she hoped. In fact, it was so disappointing in so many ways. Many folks in her position might have left music and never come back, but Latasha Lee's tenacity and sheer talent have made her one of Texas's preeminent new R&B artists.
Hi, I'm Latasha Lee, and I am a singer-songwriter, originally from Corpus Christi, but claiming Austin, Texas.
You're going to be playing ACL Fest, and a lot of people talking about you almost in the same light as Amy Winehouse and all that.
Yeah, I get a lot of that.
What do you think of the comparisons?
I don't mind the comparisons at all, because she's great. I love her. I listen to her, too, and I'm pretty sure that she listened to the same people that I listen to. I'm pretty sure she listened to a lot of Otis Redding and Sam Cooke and, you know, all of the old greats.
Was that what you heard growing up in Corpus, or was it something else?
Yeah, a lot of Betty Wright, Aretha Franklin, a lot of the old classics I did.
Let's go back in time just a little bit, growing up in Corpus. What was it like? Where'd you live? Big family, small family?
Small, I would say small just with the immediate family. You know, I have two sisters and a brother, and my mom was a single parent. I performed a lot down there in Corpus Christi. Got to see Selena as a kid. Whenever I would walk to school, I would look over her fence and look at her dogs, and she would be out there, and we'd be, she'll say hi and stuff. Never really knew who she was until she passed away, but growing up was full of music with me and my sister and just, you know, being kids, I'd say.
Where, at school and church, where would the music happen in your life when you were a kid?
The music happened inside my home. I just always sang. My mom would always say, you need to shut up. You need to be quiet sometimes, because I would be the loudest person in the house. And she, your voice carries. Your voice carries. You need to tone it down. I could never tone it down, though. I got a big old mouth.
You actually made a big splash on television not that long ago, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, somewhat. Yeah, big splash or a bomb or whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
It was the X Factor thing?
Yes, the X Factor.
I'm on the world. I'm sorry, I can't do it. So sorry. I knew all the words back there.
She really did. She really did a great job of it.
I'm so sorry.
I mean, didn't turn out for the best, but do you regret having done that or not?
No, not at all. It helps me to be more aware of things that are going on and when the cameras are rolling and how to handle things a bit better. But it was a great experience. I got to meet wonderful people, wonderful talent. I showed a lot of love that wasn't portrayed, but I wouldn't regret it. I wouldn't try to change anything because I think what's meant to happen is supposed to. So
sounds like it made you a lot wiser about the business.
Oh, yeah. Once that happened, I came back home and I got really even more focused, you know. I think I needed it.
When did things start to sort of open up for you where you were performing to bigger and bigger crowds and that kind of thing.
Things started to open up for me when I connected with Solly Williams of Carnival Beats. When I started out, it was a lot of hip hop. So it was Lil Kiki opening up for Lil Kiki or Zero or just in the studio working on our mixtapes and stuff like that. But when I got with him, that's when it really just flourished. You know, we started working on the LaTosha Lee sound. The chemistry that we both have, everything that we have, it was together.
Just a little bit of background about Solly. He's one of the better known producers.
Yes.
Who's worked with the Houston sound.
Yeah, out of Texas. He's done records for Mike Jones. He did Paul Wall's in Sideways, Draped Up by Bun B, Pouring Up by Pimp C. If everybody knows Big Mo with Bar Baby. Solly has a list of things that he's done that I can't even remember. But he pretty much put Texas and Houston, Texas on the map.
Why did you change? Why did you decide that you were going to leave the hip-hop behind and move more in a sort of a, I don't know, is it safe to say a sort of a more mature direction?
Yes, yes, because I've matured. I don't want to be on the stage at 60 years old or 50 years old trying to drop it like it's hot or, you know, take my clothes off. You know, I want to be able to sit on a stool like Etta James and just sing.
There are a lot of artists who are sort of reviving that sound. I mean, there's Charles Bradley, Sharon Jones, the Dap Kings come to mind, and just some terrific artists. And of course, you were recently interviewed by Bob Edwards for his satellite radio program. Why do you think so much attention is being focused on this kind of music right now?
I think it's needed. We need music that's healing and music that feels good. You know, we don't always just want to, you know, dance and, you know, party all the time. But in this world today, we need something that's going to get us through our day, that's going to put a smile on our face and, you know, help us survive a little better. I mean, music is life. Music is everything. We need the real deal. You know, we need you to play. Get on that stage and give it to us.
You said that when you were growing up, your mama used to say, keep it down. What does she think of her little girl now?
Oh, my mama can't keep her mouth shut. Well, my baby girl. And yeah, I'm glad you remember, huh? You remember you used to tell me to shut up? But no, she's just as proud as she can be. You know, this is all I've done. You know, from working at Whataburger and CC's Pizza and McDonald's and call centers and all kind of stuff. It's like, oh, well, it's finally starting to take off.
LaTosha Lee, it's a real delight to get to say hello to you. Thank you so much, and congratulations on all the good stuff coming your way.
And it's such a delight to be here. I sure thank you for having me.
You thought I'd never get ahead without you. Look at me now. And pull myself up out this bed without you. Let me show you how. You said I'm headed for a dead end road. And none of my dreams would unfold. I've heard it a million times before. But I grab it together.
Watch me now. Watch me now. I'm feeling
Tasha Lee, remember her name, and if you get a chance, check her out at ACL Fest in October. Life on the road as a musician playing night after night long has been romanticized in literature, film, and song, of course. Texas musician David Ramirez began keeping an unfiltered online journal of sorts, documenting his real-world experiences as a modern-day troubadour. What you're about to hear is a true story, not really appropriate for younger ears, perhaps. In the summer of 2008, I was touring the South and ran out of money the night I hit Birmingham. I played a little house show, made $30, and blew it that night on drinking. It was typical. Instead of figuring out a way to leave and move on, I decided to stay a couple weeks to see what I could make of it. The night of the house show, I met Chris. I told him about my travels and how I'd come up broke. He offered me a place to stay as well as his time and talents to help me record an EP. He rallied several friends during my time there to come contribute to our project, which I affectionately titled Birmingham. I could go on about how humbled I was over these people's hospitality and willingness to work for free for a stranger's endeavors. But that story is a sweet one, whereas I'm trying to tell more of a coming-of-age tale. One night, we finished a session around 1:45 a.m., and I needed a drink. Chris had to pass because he had work in the morning, so I shot out the door and tried to make it to a bar before last call. I didn't make it. Instead, I grabbed a soda, a pack of smokes, and walked around a nearby park. After about an hour, I decided to head back, but was sidetracked when I saw what looked like a bar packed with people. I pulled in the parking lot and approached two guys walking in their cars. Is this place open? Yeah, 24 hours. Really? They serving drinks? Yep. I parked and walked into the Quest Club. Dance floor, lights, house music. It was a gay bar. I found me an open stool, ordered a Heineken, don't ask why, and reached for a cigarette. Before I could light my cigarette, a hand shot out from my left, and a gentleman named Paul kindly lit it for me. Thanks. You're welcome. How are you? Good. Thanks. Small talk continued for a few minutes. Paul was a nice guy. He was an older man, maybe mid-50s, had kids, born and raised in Birmingham, and loved spending his retired years out drinking with the younger people of his town. After a good half hour of getting to know one another, Paul got bold. So I know this isn't your typical scene, he said, but you're here tonight. Yeah, I was just looking to have a drink. No, you're here tonight. Ah, yes, I see what you mean. Well, it was the only place I could find that was open. Well, Paul said, my cab is here, so if you're looking to drink, you should come back to my place. No, thanks. I'm good. We shook hands and parted ways. Not a minute goes by before Paul walked back in and tapped me on the shoulder. Seriously, you should come home with me. Paul, I'm flattered you want to hang more, but I'm going to stay here. To which Paul so eloquently responded, "Fuck flattery. It's just sex." And there I was, thrown off a bit.
I do, though, suppose he had a point. Nothing about me intrigued him. I was just a warm body. No reason for him to send the wrong message. I gave him a very stern no, and he got in his cab. Along with my time with Paul, I was in conversation with this woman named Cynthia. She worked the door there at the Quest Club. After Paul's exit, she leaned over to ask me what he was going on about. I told her the story, and she was offended. Everyone in here knows this isn't your scene. He's out of line asking you such things. It's seriously not a problem, Cynthia. Well, there is a bar down the street that stays open till 7 a.m., and it's your kind of scene. Would you like to join me? I should add that by this point, it was about 4:30 a.m. Sure, I said. That would be great. Cynthia and I got in our cars, and I followed her down the street to a little joint called The Nick. I would later in life come to fall in love with The Nick, but at this point, it was just another bar. I bought her a beer. She returned the favor. She shared stories about her family. I did the same. We were really getting along. She was a sweet lady with a ton of southern charm, and I was new to the road and new to meeting strangers. It was beautiful. About an hour or so into our talk, I asked her what she did outside of working the door at Quest Club. Well, that's all I'm doing at the moment. Up until recently, I was working as a call girl, but I've since put that behind me. Wow, I bet you could tell some stories. Yes, I could. Would you like to hear some? For the next hour, she stole any innocence I had left in my mind, and we said our goodbyes at sunrise around 6:30 in the morning. This was the year I began traveling the country full-time, and that was the morning I realized where and to whom the road could bring me. I was young-minded then and thought I'd just be singing pretty songs for pretty people. I'm so thankful this was and is not the case. The road has a lot of secrets, and most days the road is driving me, not the other way around. So here's to the fine city of Birmingham, to the people who helped me make a record, and to Paul and Cynthia. You both caught me off guard, and you'll never be forgotten.
You take me to glory, you take me to glory, love. Oh, oh.
Take that, Ira Glass. The artist is David Ramirez, whose latest release is titled The Rooster. Our segment was produced by Art Levy. More of David's stories can be found at davidramirezmusic.com. Coming up, the week's music news, the return of the Baptist Generals, the Blind Pets, and more as Texas Music Matters continues. From Austin, this is Texas Music Matters.
I'm Gary Hartman with the Center for Texas Music History at Texas State University in San Marcos. This week in Texas Music History, we'll follow a songwriter down country music's lost highway. On May 17, 1922, Leon Payne entered the Texas School for the Blind in Austin. Born without sight in Alba, Texas in 1912, Payne performed with Bob Wills and others before establishing himself as a talented songwriter. He penned a number of tunes for such prominent artists as George Jones, Elvis Presley, and Jim Reeves. However, Leon Payne may be best remembered for writing one of Hank Williams Sr.'s biggest hits, Lost Highway.
I was just a lad, nearly 22. Neither good good, not bad, just a kid like you. And now I'm lost, too late to pray. Lord, I paid the cost on the lost highway.
Leon Payne died in 1969. In 1971, country music legend and fellow Texan George Jones recorded an entire tribute album of Payne's songs. In 1997, he was inducted into the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame. This Week in Texas Music History is made possible in part with support from Humanities Texas. I'm Gary Hartman.
With the Week in Local Music News, I'm Peter Modulo of the Austin American Statesman, and this is the Austin Music Source. Next week's Paul McCartney shows at the Irwin Center will be the former Beatles' first time in Austin, but it's not because Irwin Center director John Graham wasn't trying. Graham said this week that he tried to land McCartney 7 or 8 times in the last 25 years. He came so close a few years ago that ticket prices and an on-sale date were in the works. Graham called McCartney a big fish and compared his shows to appearances at the arena by Bill Clinton and the Dalai Lama. When the Austin City Limits Music Festival released its 2013 lineup last week, one thing people were talking about besides Lionel Richie was the music video the fest released announcing the lineup. The video, which features some 8,000 animated bats spelling out ACL Fest acts like Depeche Mode and Muse, was created by Austin's Moontower VFX. The creation of the video involved some stunt work, including shooting video underwater at Barton Springs and using remote-controlled helicopters in Zilker Park. In other ACL Fest news, passes for the fest's first weekend sold out last week. Tickets are still available for weekend 2. Kelly Willis and Bruce Robeson were nominated for an Americana Music Award in the Duo / Group of the Year category Tuesday in Los Angeles. The pair, who recently released their album Cheater's Game, are up against Buddy Miller and Jim Lauderdale, Emmylou Harris and Rodney Crowell, and Americana duo Shovels and Rope. The awards are set for September 18th at the Ryman in Nashville. For these stories and more, visit Austin360.com. From the studios of Texas Music Matters, I'm Peter Mongelo of the Austin American Statesman.
She prays to herself that wherever he is, he's listening to the border radio.
Big congratulations indeed to Bruce and Kelly. Something tells us there are more nominations on the way.
In recent years, the North Texas town of Denton has gained a reputation as a hotbed for new music. In part, that's attributable to the fact that the town is home to one of the best music schools in the country, the University of North Texas. It's also home to an important annual music festival, 35 Denton. Chris Flemons started that festival, but that's not really what Flemons is best known for. In fact, you could make the case that Flemons' biggest contribution to Denton's reputation for musical innovation stems from his role as co-founder with drummer Steve Hill of the indie rock group The Baptist Generals.
I had been reading a book about six-man football in West Texas and Doak Walker, and there were so sparse number of kids that they played six-man to a team, and then anybody would sponsor a football team. I mean, it wasn't necessarily, you know, part of a school. And one day I was thinking, well, what would you call a team that was, like, sponsored by a Baptist church? That's how I got to that. We used to play on the street in Denton on Thursday evenings. We'd sit on Fry Street, which is rather infamous, or was a rather infamous part of town. And we'd sat outside of a beer store called the Corkscrew. And essentially, he'd just have a snare between his knees and some brushes, and I'd have my guitar, and we'd go buy 64-ounce beers and play for tips and just practice.
Alcohol.
Despite their best efforts, the Baptist Generals failed to elude commercial success altogether. Their first album released in Europe was picked up by a major indie label, Seattle's Sub Pop, and the Baptist Generals began playing bigger and bigger shows on national tours. By 2005, when it was time to record the follow-up, Fleming says he couldn't shake the feeling that something just wasn't right.
We'd just gone out on a tour in 05, and we arrived back from being on tour, and we had very much electrified our sound for the tour. And we went immediately into the studio with that instrumentation, and I really wasn't happy with how the band sounded, and basically just went to bed for a while. I was so depressed about it, and I realized that I'd totally screwed up, that my concern was sounding like any other indie rock band.
And so what would have been the Baptist Generals' second album for Sub Pop was scrapped. Still signed to the label, the Generals tried to find the old mojo, but nothing. Fleming's finally got out of bed, got involved in local grassroots politics, fighting a development project in Denton, started a new music festival, but for years, no new Baptist Generals album, until now.
Very polished sounding, and at some points I'm like, oh my gosh, is it too polished sounding? But I made a conscious effort to let other people make decisions about the recordings, because it had been so long since I'd been able to get into the studio to do it. The only way it was going to happen was if I tried not to own it.
Turn unders and overpasses. Directions change and you are different today. What do you want? What do you want?
Fleming says he'd have to stop worrying about getting it wrong or being too polished. It was all about getting it done and getting back on track. And a funny thing too, after all these years with no album, the band was still officially signed to Sub Pop. And so next Tuesday, after a 10-year hiatus, the band will release its second album for Sub Pop. It's titled Jackleg Devotional to the Heart.
It feels like coming out of the deep freeze, you know, like being woken up 10 years later, and we're feeling our way through this, I guess.
From Denton, Texas, new from the Baptist Generals on Texas Music Matters, Jackleg Devotional to the Heart is set for release on Tuesday. Although it seems that folk rock has taken pop music down a considerably softer path in recent years, the return of the Generals is just one indication that rock and roll is alive and well. The thing about rock and roll, the more raw and unrelenting it is, in other words, the truer it is to its rebellious spirit, the less respect it tends to get, even in a place like Austin that loves authenticity. Just ask this guy.
Hi, I'm Joshua Logan from the Blind Pets.
What struck me was that, to my knowledge, no one's really doing the kind of music that Blind Pets are doing in Austin.
Yeah, I mean, it's really nice to have something that's your own, you know? And I think that, you know, the band's been together for 6 years, And I feel like if I wouldn't have just been writing from like what I wanted to hear and what I wanted to do, then it probably would have took off a little faster. You know what I mean? It probably would have been something that people catch on to faster. You know, when you're making something yourself, like from scratch, it takes a while for people to catch on to it.
Is that hard for you, though? I mean, you know, you're not a band that has a natural home at one of the venues.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to say about, like, building your own thing. You know, it's like, it's almost like you're a bastard or, like, you know, like you're an outcast or something like that. You know, getting on South by Southwest, you know, we haven't even gotten, I've submitted 5 years in a row. I released, this is about to be our fourth record, you know, 50 some odd songs. And still, you know, get shut down by your hometown, even though I've been in like a documentary about South by Southwest with Iggy Pop and Johnny Cash and all these people in it, you know, sold a song to a TV show and just still nothing.
So you know? Do you think that there's a kind of an attitude or predisposition about what Austin is supposed to sound like? I mean, is there something there?
I think that there's a lot of, if our music doesn't really have a lot of twang in it, you know, it has more like a soul thing. And I feel like if you have a little twang in it, then I feel like people in Texas are easier to, like, just catch on to it.
So with your new album, Heavy Petting, it has to be tempting to sort of compromise a little bit. I mean, you know, because you want to be heard. So was your approach any different at all with Heavy Petting?
You know, it really wasn't. It was a natural thing. And, you know, I'm getting older and, you know, writing music, I feel like if you're writing music in at all, it's such a process in where you are in your age and where you are, what you're listening to, what you're eating for breakfast, you know, whatever it is, you know. And I just feel like with Heavy Petting, I've learned how to translate the songs in a new way that is it's really exciting.
So we got a new record release coming out today. Maybe we can do a radio debut.
All right. Well, this song is called Everybody's, and it rules.
Blind Pets on Texas Music Matters.
Yeah.
All Hail the Blind Pets. The forthcoming album is titled Heavy Petting. Coming up, the rediscovery of a tape nearly three decades old with a story to tell about the Austin music scene, past and perhaps present. NPR's John Burnett joins us to talk about it as Texas Music Matters continues. From Austin, this is Texas Music Matters. I'm David Brown. Jay Trachtenberg, veteran music host at our home station, KUTX Austin, came in with a tape he'd found in his garage. We spooled it up on the reel-to-reel machine and discovered more than just a sample of vintage public radio, but a rare snapshot of Austin music history, too. Something you might expect to find in some archive somewhere. Well, the year was 1986, and Noah Adams did the introduction for a program called All Things Considered.
Austin, Texas, first earned a reputation back in the early 1970s as the birthplace of progressive country music. That was when outlaw country and western singer Willie Nelson defected from Nashville and made the capital of Texas his counterculture home. Now, the national prominence of a sizzling blues rock guitarist from Austin, Stevie Ray Vaughan, signals there's something else going on. Austin has one of the most creative live music scenes in the country. And as John Burnett reports, the rest of the world is finally listening.
Across the alley from the Alamo, lived a pinto pony in the Navajo. Sang a sort of Indian howdy-ho to the people passing by.
Asleep at the Wheel is one of the granddaddies on the Austin music scene. The Western Swing and Boogie Woogie Band survived the demise of Cosmic Cowboy Chic and is still going strong. The Wheel's band leader is Ray Benson, a drawling 6.5-footer with golden hair streaming out from under his cowboy hat. Benson knows that musical styles come and go, but he says the vitality of the Austin music scene continually regenerates itself.
Cross the alley from the Alamo when the summer sun decides to settle low. A fly sings an Indian howdy-ho to the people passing by.
I've been here 13 years here in Austin, the thing about, like, they used to say, what's the Austin sound, you know? And I said, I said, there is no Austin sound. I said, there's a scene here, there's an Austin scene, and what it is a bunch of musicians who think and live alike. And the music ranges from country music to R&B to jazz to rock and roll. I mean, it's everything. There's every kind of music in town.
During a good week in Austin, the studious barfly can discover an astounding variety of acts. It may get puzzling, but it never gets boring. There's Dan Del Santo, a rotund New Yorker who favors pajama-like Nigerian clothing. He blends Caribbean, African, and jazz styles into a third-world hybrid. Electronic music guru Patrick Keel composes funky dance music and trance-like ambient melodies that have generated a cult following in underground New York discos. And Joe King Carrasco mixes garage band rock with Mexican music from South Texas. Joe King is famous for leaping from stage into the outstretched arms of fans, all the while wearing a rhinestone-studded crown on his head.
The main thing is that every kid in Texas knows that Austin was the coolest town back in the 60s. I mean, that's where everything was happening. So I spent my whole life trying to get out of North Texas down to South Texas to Austin.
This scrambling of styles is possible because of Austin's strong tradition of roots music. Located in the middle of the state, Austin has long been a crossroads of Mexican conjunto from South Texas, Zydeco and Cajun music from Louisiana, Western swing from Fort Worth, and country blues from East Texas and the Deep South. Joe Nick Potoski, a music journalist and band manager, thinks this organic quality is found in all the best Austin performers, whether Willie Nelson, Stevie Ray Vaughan, or the Fabulous Thunderbirds, to name a few.
Well, I think the most successful musicians, the real stars in town, a Willie Nelson, a Stevie Vaughan, or the Fabulous Thunderbirds, those would be your best examples, are all from roots traditions. Willie sings pure country. The Thunderbirds and Stevie play real rhythm and blues. It's not manufactured blues rock so much. And I think that comes from the fact that these things still exist here. It's not something you just listen to at home on records and try to emulate, or it's not something you read about. There are still juke joints in Texas, and there are still roadhouses, and there are still country western dance halls.
The Fabulous Thunderbirds is one of Austin's favorite bands. The lead guitar player, Jimmy Vaughan, is Stevie Ray Vaughan's older brother.
Well, I don't live like a king, and I don't drive a big car. The gypsy woman was right, but she said I would go far. Just wait on time, baby, I'll be there one day. Yes, and until I get there, baby, all I can do is hope and pray.
It's almost cyclical. Every few years, the music industry decides that Austin is producing something quite hip. Recently, MTV, along with Rolling Stone and Spin magazines, have made a big fuss over a group of bands that play a sort of back-to-basics guitar-heavy rock. A local cynic snickeringly labeled them the New Sincerity. But they've apparently caused enough of a stir for some record companies to pursue them. One of the strongest and least publicized areas of Austin music is the thriving rhythm and blues scene, which is what Stevie Ray Vaughan came out of. The heart and soul of the blues community is a nightclub called Antone's, easily one of the best blues clubs in the country. The owner, Clifford Antone, is a man with a mission, and that is to preserve the blues. He's bought guitars for young musicians who were out of money and paid hospital bills for older bluesmen who were down on their luck. The blues fans say next in line to bust out of Austin may be another Antone's regular, a razor-voiced singer named Angela Straley.
I'm tired of television, tired of video.
Most Austin acts that sign with a major label go to Los Angeles to record their album. But many local musicians that haven't hit the big time yet put out independent records using local studios and local musicians. Angela Straley released this 45 on her own with a local hot guitar player, Denny Freeman. She says the Austin blues people chose not to move to LA or New York so they would not have to compromise their music.
We've all held out over these years to be able to have things our way, sort of. We'd rather do it on our own turf. So, consequently, since we didn't go to them, it's taken a long time for them to come to us.
The 50,000 students at the University of Texas at Austin make this a natural mecca for musicians. The students make for open-minded audiences that encourage musical experimentation. They help preserve a liberal oasis in the desert of conservative pro-business Texas. Even the laws favor the young. Possession of an ounce or less of marijuana is punishable by the equivalent of a traffic ticket, and topless sunbathing is permissible in public. Country musician Gary P. Nunn migrated to Austin from the dusty, straight-laced city of Lubbock in deep west Texas. He's best known for London Homesick Blues that became the theme song for the progressive country era.
Austin is always, you know, of course, with the university here, has always been a youth-oriented city, and anybody who came here from another town, you know, realized very quickly that they were escaping from something and enjoying a freedom here that was tolerant of some people being a little bit different, you know, or creative. You know, I came from Lubbock where, you know, if you were an artist or a musician, you were no good starting out.
Some folks think this laid-back nonconformity has contributed to an overall unprofessional attitude toward the music business. It's not uncommon for an Austin musician to have to work a day job, and the record companies have yet to open an Austin office. The town could also use more experienced managers and a good music publishing company. There's a movement afoot to try to professionalize the music scene, to turn Austin into what some have called the Third Coast. Even the Chamber of Commerce is promoting the music scene now. But most people seem to believe the business side of music will never really flourish in Austin. It will continue to be what it's always been, and that's a musician's town. For National Public Radio, this is John Burnett reporting.
Back in 1986, when that story was first broadcast, reporter John Burnett had not been officially hired by NPR. In fact, John was a freelance reporter based in Atlanta at the time. So what inspired you to do this story on Austin, John?
Well, I mean, I went to school here, and I played in bands, and I worshipped at the shrine of Antone's when it was on 6th Street, and heard every great living blues man in the world there, and I just wanted an excuse to come back and hang out and be a journalist. And so I think Austin, you know, it got these buzzes periodically. Everybody always paid attention to Austin, and I had been in Central America, and while I was gone, Stevie Ray became a superstar.
Stevie Ray Vaughan.
And he was a local bar star when I left.
Uh-huh.
And actually, you know, he used to go to Ray Hendrix's Heart of Texas Music, and he would buy guitar springs, and I would buy harmonicas, and sometimes, you know, we would play across the room from one another. It was no big deal. Of course, there's this treasury of other local musicians here, many of whom were in that piece.
And you know, Dan Del Santo, he used to work at our home station, KUT Austin. Came over from upstate New York or something.
He came down from New York, and he was like the man in black, and he played at a little place called Spellman's. It was on 5th Street, and Dan Del Santo's and his professors of pleasure.
Joaquin Carrasco, he's still doing his thing around town.
Yeah.
Angela Straley. He never quite made that next step to national prominence.
But at the time, we didn't know. I mean, everybody was sort of on the cusp. I mean, Stevie Ray Vaughan had made it, and so mm-hmm. it seemed like America was going to fall in love with what we listen to down here.
One of the things that strikes me about this story that you did back 27 years ago is not just that the names have changed, but how much has really not changed in some ways about the Austin music scene. A lot of these themes that you talked about in this story from 1986, issues such as the, as you put it, lack of professionalism. We don't have any major music publishers even today. There are no major labels here in Austin, Texas. There's also, as Joe Nick Petoskey, who is one of the doyens of music journalism here in Texas today, as he noted, Austin is kind of proud and wears on its sleeve this idea that it's more authentic than it is elsewhere.
It's never grown out of that image as this is where the raw product is produced. And what's actually great is that Austin is now completely self-confident as this great wetlands of musical talent. And it doesn't have to be one of the coasts anymore because now everybody comes to Austin. The music scene here is absolutely thriving. It's even more creative than it was when I did that story. There's more bands here, many more bands here, many more venues here. Lord knows there's a lot to crab about. Everybody does still have to have a day job. There's still a pretty pathetic wage scale here for musicians. But I'm just blown away by just the quantity and quality of the music that still comes out of this town.
I guess that means that even though your beat has officially changed, it's time for you to redo this story. You think your editors at NPR will give you another 10 minutes to
10 minutes. Boy, those were the good old days in 1986. They would say, okay, Burnett, you have 4.5 minutes to do this. Yeah.
Thanks for coming in and doing this, John. I appreciate it.
Thanks for discovering the ancient tapes. That was fun, David.
NPR's Austin-based correspondent, John Burnett. Many of the artists John spoke about, Jimmy and Stevie Vaughan, Angela Straley, Denny Freeman, countless others too, like Paul Ray and Doyle Bramhall, first made their marks in Austin at a club that is today known the world over as Stubbs. Only back then, it wasn't Stubbs, it was a completely different place, different name, different clientele for sure. It had a door shaped like a coffin, with junk hanging from the ceilings, literally the kitchen sink. Leaky air conditioners, a lot of Harleys leaning side by side out front, and a constant stream of young, talented blues artists. But unless you were there, chances are you've never even heard of the One Night.
My name is Stu Gilbert, and I'm the director of a film called Spent a Year There, One Night, about the One Night Club in Austin.
Why did you decide to do a film about the One Night Club? What got you interested? I mean, you don't seem to be old enough to be, if you'll forgive me, to be one of its, you know, regulars from back in the day.
All right. No, I was really interested in Bob Dylan. I went and saw him years ago, and he had this guitar player named Denny Freeman.
Uh-huh.
I heard him playing, and that was it for me. I wanted to, you know, find out everything I could about him. And so I went home and Googled his name and came up with that he was from Austin and that he came out of this blues scene in Austin. And I found this name of this club called the One Night. There's maybe 2 mentions of it online. I mean, you couldn't find any information about it, but there's a couple of pictures and a couple of stories about it, and it sounded fascinating. And then once I started coming down here and I met all these guys and I would talk to them about the One Night and get these stories, but there was no other information other than this first person sort of thing. And I realized that once the people who went to this club start to disappear, the club disappears. Unless somebody, you know, coalesces some kind of information about it.
We're listening to one of the very few recordings in existence from the old One Night, caught in 1972, June of 1972 to be precise. This is Jimmy Vaughan's band, The Storm.
Well, I think the reason that it hasn't been documented or talked about is that its heyday was the early 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
And here in Austin, the early 1970s is completely thought of as the time of, you know, Willie Nelson, the Cosmic Cowboy.
The Armadillo World Headquarters.
Yeah, yeah. And that's great, and it should be, you know, mentioned. And I mean, it was a bigger place, but all the blue, you know, Denny Freeman, Doyle Bramhall, Paul Ray, Jimmy Vaughan, Stevie Vaughan, Angela Straley, they all played this club because they couldn't play anywhere else. They couldn't play the Armadillo. And in my opinion, more so than Antone's even, it kind of incubated the white blues scene here that took off kind of in the 80s with the Thunderbirds and Stevie. But that didn't spring up out of the ground overnight. It came from this club that nobody remembers except for the people that went there.
Final goodbye to the One Night has been set for Monday, May 20th at Stubbs on Austin's Red River. There'll be a screening of the documentary and a performance by Austin's One Night All Stars.
Texas Music Matters is made possible in part by Lewis Shanks of Texas, offering fine home furnishings since 1945. LewisShanksFurniture.com.
Texas Music Matters is a production of KUT and KUTX, home of the Austin Music Experience. Our production crew includes Haley Howell, Art Levy, Delaney Hall, Hadi Mawagde, Paul Karuba, and Tyler Pratt. On behalf of the entire Texas Music Matters team, I'm David Brown, wishing you all the very best from Austin, Texas.